Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
This is a talk to we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, right. 11,
and most
11,
of the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453.
Welcome aboard Foxed Up for, whatever it is, Wednesday night, Thursday morning, or Thursday afternoon, all depending on where you reside on this beautiful blue marble, such that it still kind of is. Welcome aboard. We got stuff to do. The internet has been so weird lately. You know, Peter's not the only one. I got up this morning, and it was, and my up pipe was, well, both pipes were just choked. It seemed to be across providers here in Australia, so something in the mad infrastructure over here must have fallen over. It seems to have progressively gotten better over the last couple of hours, but hey, these are the things we deal with. Before we get into stuff, though, I've got a couple of tracks today. Two different artists, one you know very, very well, one you probably might not even know. One is a drive-by truckers track because it's been my earworm for over a week now. And then the other one is from a great Australian band known as the Masters Apprentices. Now, the Masters Apprentices, a couple of the members were just inducted into the ARIA Hall of Fame last night. And that's, you know, kind of like the Australian Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And the Masters Apprentices were probably one of the biggest and earliest breakthrough original rock and roll artists out of Australia. And this song that I'm about to play has been covered a number of times. There's three guys involved, and they actually still play. They go by a thing. They go by Cotton Keys and Morris now. And it's one of these situations where, you know, the Masters Apprentices after a while folded, and then some of those members became another band, and now the three main guys have come back together, and they combine kind of their whole package and do a show. So you get a little bit of Masters Apprentices stuff, you get some of Morris' solo career stuff, and it's a great show. I got called in a few years ago to mix them once at last minute, and it was a great show. And I just think that this is an awesome song, and I figured because they were inducted into the ARIA Hall of Fame last night, and I reckon they're a bunch of great guys who can still play their asses off, that we should just do this. And you'll also hear a little bit more from this band on the weekend for a little spot that I've done for Night Sounds. But you'll have to wait till Saturday for that. And don't forget, Saturday night, Night Sounds, it's Billy Shear's one-year anniversary. But kick back. This is some Australian, I don't know, early psychedelia, maybe? Kind of? It's just a great song. It's called The Real Thing. It's from the early 60s. The net was so slow, I didn't quite get all the kind of background information that I would have liked to have had, but, you know, we can get there. Just kick back, enjoy the song. You know, it's, you know, if you got the lava lamp, kick it on, turn the lights down, light a few candles, light something else if you like. Perfect song for this. So, a legendary Australian band, The Master's Apprentices and The Real Thing. Roll it, Bob. Now, that's some high-energy stuff. I did find a Wikipedia page, just to give you a little idea. Master's Apprentices formed in Adelaide in 1964 and continued until 1972, reforming briefly in 1988 and on several subsequent occasions. The Raw Sound and Wild Stage Act led top Australian radio DJ Stan Roll to dub them Australia's Rolling Stones. Like their counterparts, the Easy Beats and the Twilights, they tried to break into the British music scene. And one of the later members of the band, Glenn Wheatley, learned valuable lessons from their travails. After moving into artist management in the 1970s, he played a major role in Australian music industry and the media. Glenn Wheatley is probably one of the most important musical management guys in Australia. And in fact, he just got out of jail. He was hiding some income. And just actually got out of jail. And I know that... I still actually think he's a pretty good guy, and I think there are much worse tax evaders than Mr. Glenn Wheatley out there. But, you know, the media loves to make a spotlight of former musicians and things, I reckon, and I think it's a mess. But anyway, a little bit of Australian 60s rock and roll, and it really did big guns, and for them, everything kind of changed with the Beatles. And in Adelaide, there was a lot of UK migrants there, so they're going after the British sound thing really worked in that area, and they've done really, really great things, and congratulations to the boys for being inducted into the ARIA Hall of Fame last night. Now, this other track is pretty recent, and you've heard it before, but this has been, you know, Bob and I talk all the time about earworms. And this has been an earworm for me for over a week now. And for those of you who have not gotten your hands on Brighter Than Creation's Dark from the Drive-By Truckers, you have no idea what you're missing. I think it's one of the best albums I've come across in ages. It's just such a great thing. And it's the lyric of this song that speaks to me so... I mean, sometimes I really wonder if, you know, somehow they're writing this song to explain my feelings about music and media and the change of generations and all that kind of stuff. And I guess probably because they're right from our generation, Bob, you know. And I just, this song has been speaking to me. I have played it over and over and over again. The album has not left my MP3 player for a couple of weeks now. And I just, three chord magic. For the technically curious, from best just one time go through, it's D, C, and G. That's it. It's the whole song. And when you can take three chords and make them work, that, to me, is just the most amazing example of genius. It doesn't have to be hard. It just has to be good, and it has to sink into your head. So this lyric, and I just love... there are just kind of too many lines to quote, but that line about one generation dying from its habits and the other thinking rock and roll was new... And there are references to what have to be American Idol in there, and I just think it's spot on. So without further ado, great friends of this network, friends of Bob Kincaid's, and just a really great band that I'm so happy to see having continued and greater successes as they go on. I think they are a band that deserves all the accolades that they can get. So without further ado... Self-Destructive Zones from the Drive-By Truckers off Brighter Than Creation's Dark. Roll it, Bob.
Revolution hit the air. Girls hadn't even
I swear, Cooley has just got to be one of the coolest lyricists I've heard in recent times. He's just, he really has a way of laying words out that hit home, sink straight into your brain. You know, it's great stuff. It really is great stuff. I love all those lines, you know, letting it all die fairy tale instead of admitting something bigger's passing through. I, you know, it all just hits home to me, and I totally dig it. Okay, we got more important stuff to get to. Now, I dropped in, you all would remember our good friend Rama, as in Grace and Rama, our friends in Vermont who do the show on Sunday nights. Now, Gene sent me a story yesterday about a Vermont hemp farming bill that has become law. And Gene sent this around to a bunch of people. And I got a reply from, pardon me while I find this, from Rama. And I left him, I sent him a note seeing if he would have time to have a bit of a chat about this, because he thinks it's a step backwards somehow. Now, let me see if I can find this. Wow. Hold on. And I sent a message to Rama hoping that he could ring me up to explain make a couple of adjustments to mic stands here. And where are you? Time is really... I'm badly organized again today, folks, so I have to look. But anyway, while I look for that, I'll tell you the story. Anyway, from VoteHemp.com, out of Vermont, VoteHemp, a grassroots advocacy organization working to give farmers the right to grow non-drug industrial hemp, is extremely pleased that the Vermont Secretary of State's office accepted formal opinion number 2008-1 from the Office of the Attorney General and gave H-267 the Hemp for Vermont bill. The designation, blah, 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 blah. The smart and effective grassroots organizing by Vote Hemp and the Vermont-based advocacy group Rural Vermont mobilized farmers and local businesses, many of which pledged to buy their hemp raw materials in-state if they have the opportunity. Rural Vermont's director, Amy Schoenberger, says that the Hemp for Vermont bill is another step towards legalizing the important crop for farmers. The United States is the only industrialized nation in the world that doesn't allow this crop to be grown. Looking at the Canadian experience, hemp provides a good return for the farmer and is a high-yield crop and a great crop to mix with corn. Vermont grows an average of 90,000 acres of corn per year, a small amount. So they're basically laying it out that, you know, it's time to... wake up. You know, we've had this conversation on this program before. You know, the fact that we're just, it's so wasteful that we're not utilizing this amazing raw material, right? Amazing raw material. Now, I am now going to just bear with me a minute. I really have to fix a couple of my bad reorganizations in the studio. All right, here we go. Rama wrote to me, says, "Hey, guys, unfortunately, this hemp bill is not a hemp bill at all. What it is a litany of regulations and new government police powers should the federal government ever decide to grace us with legalized hemp farming. I like and respect the groups and people who have been involved in this, but they're being very misleading when they present this as a victory. If anything, it's a step backwards." And I do hope to get in touch with Rama a little bit so that, because, I mean, he's close. He's up there. And I know he's involved. He's probably, you know, well acquainted with these groups. Be curious to really get a little bit more, I guess, information explaining why he thinks that this is a step backwards. Because if you read it, it looks good. But I guess this again falls into this problem, like states that have passed medical marijuana bills, The state's not going to prosecute, but the federal government can come down. And so maybe this is what Rama is referring to, which is bloody unfortunate. Bloody unfortunate, because there's so much, you know, fuel, building supplies, food, paper, you know, all that stuff. We've talked about this before. It really is, you know, kind of the wonder crop. And it's all, and I mean, we know it's only because of industry trying to protect themselves. You have many different forces involved, making sure that hemp and marijuana stay illegal, starting with the alcohol lobby. They want to have a monopoly on your intoxication. It's that simple. Because I guarantee you, beer and wine sales would drop a bit if pot were legal. I guarantee it. I put money on it. Now, there are other things. There's the paper companies. This is a threat to tree pulp paper, big time, because hemp doesn't require nasty chemicals to bleach it and all that kind of stuff, and it lasts a really long time, unlike pulp paper, and, you know, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. Now, I'm going to try and find this other one, because there's a bill up for actually legalizing for all that's up, and I found this one kind of interesting. Let's see if I can find this one. And I can't remember which state it was. I think maybe, I don't know if Gene sent this to me or if I got this via Stumble, and of course I'm not able to find it now. But I believe it's the state of California has a bill up, and this is kind of interesting, about actually making marijuana, the smokable type, legal for everyone. And the plan is you have to buy a license. And the licenses are $5 a plant. And then there would be a tax on the sales. I think they said something like $5 or $10 an eighth. Now, think about it. If something like this passed. Now, one of the things that they in this bill, they seem to be avoiding the idea of taxing the income from such sales. And the discussion is leaning towards this is a way to protect those who may go into this from actually having the IRS being able to follow up on them via claims of income, which is this is this thing that we're fighting between state and federal law. So, you know, like we always hear from the right wing, you know, states' rights, states' rights, states' rights, which we always know is about racism. But here's an instance where the state has decided that there would be much less harm done if it were legal. Now, think about it. Just think about it. If in the state of California it became perfectly legal to grow and buy marijuana for personal use, and, you know, the grower had to pay for a permit, and the buyer pays a tax like you pay on alcohol and cigarettes, and then remove all the criminal conviction and prosecution money that's wasted on minor drug crimes, which I don't believe should be crimes. Folks in California are saying that this could very well be the economic boost that the state needs to pull their ass out of the fire. I mean, think of the income. I mean, it's already the biggest cash crop in America, hands down. Thank you, Gene. He found me the link. You're a champion. Okay. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.